Someone sent me this Neem Karoli Baba quotation. All religions are the same. They all lead to God. God is everybody. You see, this is a very important point that gets missed. And why this teaching emphasizes on relationships. God is everybody is a very subtle pointer because consciousness is all there is. There is nothing apart from consciousness. This manifestation is not apart from God, because if it were apart from God, it would mean that there is another power governing the manifestation. If we are clear, God governs manifestation, it means that the manifestation is a reflection of God within God. It cannot be apart from it. This world that we see is a reflection of the source within itself, cannot be apart from it. Can the reflection in a mirror be apart from the one seeing the reflection? It has no standing on its own. So if you are worshipping the formless consciousness, Nirgun Brahman, and you find that your relationship issues are not resolved, they are a mess, they are inharmonious, there is a problem there. You may be deep in your worship of consciousness and God, or even God with form in your temple, in a temple outside, wherever it may be. But yet, if your relationships are not harmonious, then that is not a complete worship of God. And that is why this teaching brings in this aspect of God with form. God is everybody. Does not mean you have to worship everybody. Does not mean you have to love everybody. It only means I accept everyone in my life has come with their blueprint, the way the higher power willed it for them. Gave them a set of circumstances, their conditioning, their intellect, on the basis of which they function and take decisions. So while I may not agree with some people in my life, while I may not get along with some of them, I accept that they are an equal part of manifestation as I am. That is all. I don't have to hug everyone. I don't have to love everyone. That is why my teacher would say, all you have to do is not hate anyone. That's all. So when hate is pulled out from the equation in a relationship, I find I may still get pained by what someone does or says, but I am now more objective. I am more responsive rather than reactive. I find I can assess the situation because my mind is calmer, not triggered by past patterns, and a response comes out rather than a reaction. That is the subtle difference which takes place in my relationships. So some people who are looking for higher teachings, they feel this is too basic and mundane for them. They want experiences, they want states of samadhi, and so on and so forth. That is their path. But my point is this any different from samadhi? If a teaching gifts you peace, equanimity, and tranquility in daily living, where the mind is at rest, you are enjoying your silence more, is this teaching offering anything less? Or would you prefer that when you sit in your meditation, in your dhyan in the morning, and you touch upon a very high state of samadhi, you feel accomplished, and the rest of the day is a mess because you don't know how to relate not only to people, but you don't know how to relate to events which transpire in the day. Sometimes pleasure, many times pain. That too is a relationship in relation to. And a teaching comes along and says, look here, everything is God's will. Whatever the next moment may bring is the will of God. Whether you like it or not is secondary. When I start living with this acceptance that I don't know what will come tomorrow and I accept it, maybe pain arises, I accept the pain because now I understand this was meant to be, otherwise it would not have happened. So I'm no longer asking questions, why God, why did you choose me, why did you do this to me, why did you punish me, what have I done wrong? That dialogue is finished. So my relationship to what comes unasked is where I am, which is a total acceptance of what is. And after that acceptance, I do precisely that which I think and feel I should do. That is how I have to operate in life. I have to make my move on the chessboard of life, knowing that a higher power actually moves me. And a higher power moves the other. That is the only difference. So I'm no longer wanting to win arguments anymore. No longer wanting to force my opinion down people's throats, thinking I am right. In fact, you can try this sometime. When you feel you are 100% right, just tell the other person you are right. It is liberating. Because then you know how attached or not you are to your position. So, this world is a relationship. That is why this is the realm of duality, not singularity, in relation to. And this is not about a physical expression of a relationship. Where does action come from? Thought. I may feel I hate someone and I put on a pretense when I meet that person. But the relationship is already established in my mind. What this teaching does, it comes in there and heals it there. So that even the thought of hate cannot arise. Because you have seen how misperceived this thought is. How could I possibly blame someone for saying or doing something just because I don't like it? And what happens when the content of my mind undergoes this transformation? A mind free of ill will, condemnation, blame, judgment. When all that content is not operating in the mind, that becomes my vibration. If there are two people sitting side by side and one has constant thoughts of all this, jealousy, envy, arrogance, malice, and so on and so forth, and the other is quite literally a blank slate, both of them are vibrating at a certain frequency, which we could call one being at peace and the other not at peace. Simple. So this approach offers a cleansing of the thinking mind so that you receive the person who comes in front of you today as an aspect of God, which in turn would mean, it would mean that when this person comes in front of me, my relationship is no longer with this person. It is with God. This is the dawn of wisdom. Why? Because I'm no longer seeing through the eyes of two, the eyes of duality, the physical eyes. That seeing is now happening through the third eye, the eye of wisdom. Is that something small? It may appear small, but is it? You see, that is why the highest teachings are the simplest. Does not involve too much, but they are so simple that they are not attractive. They don't attract the ego. The ego wants tamasha. The ego wants dialogue. The ego wants action-reaction. The ego wants to sustain the tennis match for 5 sets, possibly a 6th if it was possible. Ego loves that because I know who I am. And this teaching is the end of drama. Scary. No more drama in my life. can scare the ego. I loved the drama. I loved the highs. And I even loved the lows. And how long are you going to go like this? Always seeking pleasures, always running away from pain, and then identifying with pain. We get identified with our pain because we know who we are. The ego is now comfortable. I know I am the one who is being pained in this relationship. That is an identity. Ego is not willing to let go of that. Absolutely crazy. Absolute. The normal way of functioning is absolutely crazy. And we call other people crazy. They are the ones who are free. They don't care. Walking on the streets, rambling away. We care. We have an image to protect. We have views to defend. Yogananda said something. In those days, to punish criminals, he would cut off their ear or something. And he said, cutting off one ear, what will he do? He'll walk near walls, no one sees that his ear is cut off. But you cut off a man's, both his ears, then he becomes fearless because he can't go against any wall. And he'll walk in the middle of the street. Nothing to fear now. All taken away. This teaching makes one fearless because you're not trying to protect yourself from another power now. You know there's only one power. There are no two powers. There's one power operating, and this is the show. That is how kings in ancient epochs and times would rule, even enlightened masters. Where do you think the crown comes from? The crown is the crown chakra, the Sahasrara chakra, fully open, connected with the divine. Those were the original kings. All symbols come from somewhere because they could really rule the kingdom. They didn't get swayed by the polarities. They didn't get swayed by the generous man or the thief. They were the rulers. Then, of course, it became an ego trip and all about bloodlines and lineages and so on and so forth. If you see the Red Indian tribes, Native Indian tribes, the chief has this headgear of feathers. What is that? Same thing. Enlightenment. People laugh. What is this guy doing wearing feathers? They don't know where it comes from. From the subtle dimension which was seen as streaks of light above the crown. And to represent that, the wise men created headgear. All this is forgotten. Because what we see seems so real and we get lost in it. So this aspect of God is everybody. In your life, whether it is at your workplace, whether it is your siblings, whether it is your parents, whether it is your children, whether it is your friends, whether it is your bhajiwala, dudwala, is this issue resolved? Now, there are some relationships which are destined to be misunderstood. You try your best to explain your point of view to someone and they think the opposite. We all have such relationships. I rarely speak about this. Some relationships are destined to be misunderstood. You try your best. You say something, the person takes it in another way. Then you apologize. I didn't mean it that way. Or maybe you reflect and ask yourself, was there a hint of that? You're honest enough with yourself to ask yourself, that did I actually have a bit of that, what the person is saying? You ask yourself. And you may say, yes, maybe this person is right, but I certainly didn't mean it the way they are saying it. And you find, no matter what you say, it's taken wrongly. Now what? Because you see, this can be potentially harmful. Because if someone is constantly misinterpreting what you say and telling you about it, guilt can start arising. You start feeling guilty and self-doubt sets in. Because guilt is a very big tool. People love to make others feel guilty. We all have done it. The point is, when I reach my own conclusion that a particular relationship, no matter what I try, it gets misunderstood. Now what do I do? Do I go on all my life constantly getting entangled in this, defending my position, saying I didn't mean it, and so on and so forth, because it's destroying my peace? So when I accept that I needn't try to force each relationship to come to a balance, some are not meant to, I give up this game. I'm done now. I'm tired. Not in terms of a negative reaction. Internally, I have given it my all. Now I've understood that this was meant to be misunderstood as per God's will. I wish this person well from the bottom of my heart. I really wish life is kind to them, gives them more moments of pleasure, less of pain, from the bottom of my heart. But now I know, as far as we both are concerned, I did what I could. And if I haven't done what I could, I will do what I can. But then I have to let it rest, because there is where I will find my peace. So this total acceptance of the definition of harmonious relationships means also to accept relationships which will perpetually be misunderstood. As long as my weapons of hate are not targeted at the other, because that is now invalid. I've understood the sheer ridiculousness of this position to hate the other for troubling me, and I wish the person well, I am at peace. And then I find, by and by, I become more sensitive to what I am saying. The words I use to anyone, are those words based on doership? Would I like to listen to those same words? You see, try listening to yourself. Usually I'm giving back to the person who gave it to me. The ego indulges in that mudslinging. You threw those words at me, now watch. That game is an old one. Are you going to do it all your life? The other day someone mentioned to me, I'd love to come for your talks, but is it possible when I come that you don't have all those gaps, because I'll go crazy. I'll go crazy means what? The mind can't handle silence. I said, how is it possible? Because these, I'm not even doing the gaps. The gaps happen. I'm not some public motivational speaker or anything. What comes, comes. When it doesn't come, it doesn't come. And her husband said, but we thought that with the gaps, you were thinking of what to say next. And I said, it's the opposite. This is all reverse gear. This whole teaching is reverse. And they were genuinely asking, you know, it was very genuine points they were raising, because that is the conditioned mind. That is how the mind stays alive with engagement. Because
from the silent sitting, yeah, everyone said that.
Yeah. I will do that. I will say it tomorrow. Next time I'm going to talk non-stop and sit in silence. But I can understand this. I do genuinely know where this is coming from. Because we all have been through this, maybe at different phases of our lives when we were younger. I used to love those old black and white silent movies. They were equally entertaining, you know, they'd have just the titles. Even when I watch the news, my sound is off. My wife says, how do you watch news? I don't understand. I said, but you don't need the sound. The images are there, captions are there. It's enough, no? Of data. We don't need a data overload. Would anyone like to share something or ask something?
Quote from
this for the recording.
There is one quote, it says, it's from Raman Maharishi, but it is, this one, can I read this? Yeah. So it says, when in the view of the one indivisible space, even the pot has no separate existence, is it not foolish to say that the space inside the pot moves with the movements of the pot? Similarly, when in the plenitude of self-consciousness, body and world cannot even exist, being non-self and incomplete. It is ridiculous to say that self moves because of the movements of the mutable body and world. So, is it saying that when the body moves, consciousness is still, it doesn't move, and the same consciousness which is in everybody, the awareness, it is just oneself and it is not moving, but the body is moving. So then what is moving?
The body is being moved by consciousness, because consciousness is also dynamic, right? That is why this manifestation is dynamic consciousness. It is not consciousness at rest.
So there are two things which I was thinking or contemplating. Maybe the conscious, the body, or the objects, whatever, living or non-living, all is consciousness only. Whether it is manifested or whether it is not manifested, is the understanding right?
There is nothing else.
There is nothing else, so there is no two.
Exactly. In deep sleep, is there anything else besides deep sleep? So that takes us very close to that, you see. Impersonal consciousness in deep sleep, because you as the ego don't exist in deep sleep. But in dreams and in the waking state, impersonal consciousness becomes identified consciousness. It is yet consciousness. How is your mother now?
Yeah, she is good. We have started the treatment. She's good. So everything, whatever appears or whatever we experience, is in awareness. So there is nothing apart from awareness. Whatever appears or whatever we are experiencing at the moment is in awareness. So I am awareness.
Well, you could say that in theory.
Yeah.
So what happens in this case is I am awareness. Like I am awareness, and then whatever is experienced again becomes two. So experience and awareness. So that is again two, which I feel when I... So I have understood that whatever is experienced is in awareness. And we are that awareness, which can only see, we cannot do anything about that, because we can just know. We are just a knower. Apart from knowing, there is nothing nothing what we can do. And we should keep contemplating on that is what the sadhana is.
And the measure of that sadhana will be the degree of peace that we feel in our life. If the sadhana is driving us crazy, then we have a problem there. It's very important to know this. It's really simple, you know. Most of my troubles which keep me awake, if I look at them, they are based on doership. What people did to me or said to me, or what I said to them, or what God did to me. It's still doership. And that is the burden humankind carries. The animals don't carry this burden. As Rameshji would say, humans have the dubious gift of intellect which makes them ask questions and then creates suffering for themselves and others. The dubious gift of intellect. Can you imagine if you had no questions left about what has happened in life, what has happened to you, why did it happen? Imagine if that whole dialogue was erased. Is that even possible to imagine?
Some questions are healthy, right? When you expand your awareness and perspective.
Sure. But that is something quite different. That is the operation of inquiry and knowledge. But if questioning life is what the content of my mind is all the time, which indirectly shows me there's a complete non-acceptance of what is. I refuse to accept what is, and so I'm questioning life all the time. So who is this questioner questioning life? It disappears in deep sleep. I'm not asking questions in deep sleep. I'm asking questions in the waking state. So who is this me who is all the time questioning what God did and what people did? That is why they say on your spiritual journey, you don't get answers to your questions, because the mind is such, it will create more questions and more questions and more questions. But rather, the questions will dissolve. And the questions dissolve in the peace of being. A lot of things will not make sense in life. You can't rationalize them. And all your life, you'll try to rationalize life. I did this, but that happened. It should not have been that way. According to what I did, that should have happened. You start rationalizing. It doesn't make sense, because our view is so limited and the full picture is so vast. But we get obsessed by our view. We obsess over it, create trouble for ourselves and force it down the other's throat. The sage has accepted that I am unable to view this entire painting. It is too vast, too detailed, too intricate. I am only able to see a section of it. And on basis of that section which I see, I'm judging the whole painting. Doesn't make sense. Yes, Dipesh.
Could you please help us explore more on what is that? What we are looking through our mind is what is not.
You could say that, but better to say that what we are looking through our mind is limited.
When you say about what is which is free from all definitions, labeling, judging, condemnation?
Yes.
That is the original state of what is.
Yes.
Identifying as from our own viewpoint?
No. If there is a total acceptance of what is, something happens in my life today, and I accept it. That is what is. It is not was, it is not future, will be. It is what is. In that what is included my reaction to what is. But when this initial battle is dropped, which normally we are battling the what is and rationalizing it. Kya hua, kaise hua, kyun hua? All that, when that dissolves, I'm left with pure what is. When I'm left with pure what is, I find I'm also resting in being. Because my mind has not started to churn and create all these different scenarios, going into the dead past, in imaginary futures, and the churn is not going on. So usually our state is that we battle with what comes the next moment. That it starts there only. And this teaching is saying is, what comes came unasked. You know, it is such a mystery. Supposing, tell me a watch brand which you like. Any? Rolex? Okay. Let's take a Rolex watch. And you see a Rolex watch. And you say, wow. Okay. Then someone tells you, where did this Rolex watch come from? Then you do research. Where is the Rolex factory based? Switzerland or China or wherever. You know, this is how many years it takes to make the watch. This is what goes behind it. This is why it is expensive. And you get the whole story in linear time of that watch. But do you know what is the honest answer of where the Rolex watch came from?
I don't know.
No. The answer is, it came from the invisible. Why?
Are we even justifying
one sec.
That it came from the invisible?
This is very important.
The honest answer is, I don't know.
No, this is very important. In your field of consciousness, which is your own personal experience, everything, where has it come from? It was not there before. I was not before you stepped into this house. So you can say I was born in Mumbai, parents, this, that, and the linear story starts. But some object was not there in your consciousness and popped in. From where? But all objects have stories attached to them. But the fact is, they appear on the screen of consciousness just like you're watching a movie. This we lose sight of. Everything appears, disappears, appears, disappears. The person I love appears, disappears. Person I hate appears, disappears. And that field of awareness is relegated to the background. But my own experiences, my child appears in my consciousness, disappears in my consciousness, husband appears, disappears, friends appear, disappear. I had dinner with them last night, they appeared, now they are not there, disappeared from consciousness. I made money yesterday on the stock market, disappeared. Today I've lost money, disappeared. And if I am established in being, this becomes very obvious. Things coming, things going, things coming, things going. It's crazy. It should be so obvious. It should be so obvious. But we are so lost in the story of our lives. By the divine will, not our doing. We can take consolation in that, that we were meant to be lost. Till we become aware of it by the divine will. So there will be some destinies to be completely lost in the story of life. Lost in involvement, lost in drama, day in and day out, day in and day out, as per their destiny.
Is it also so that we don't want to miss that moment, or we don't want to lose that moment, so we keep on building stories in our mind?
Yes, certainly.
Because we fear to lose that moment.
Yes, and that is familiar. That is where we are familiar. The ground of the familiar. I feel safe there.
You should put this talk as a reply to the Rolex ad on YouTube.
We have assigned value to objects, whether it is a monetary value or in terms of what objects, human objects, we are close to and far from. But if you both are sitting in front of me and I like you and I don't like you, the fact is both are equally there in my own consciousness. I have assigned the values of like and not like. Who is this I who has assigned these values? Will that person stand up? The baby which I was, the child which I was, when both of you came in front of me, there were no values assigned. I was equal. That was the child consciousness. The child consciousness became an adult ego with a sense of doership ingrained in it, with its likes and dislikes. Now it views these objects this way. But that child consciousness didn't go anywhere. The consciousness is the same, body of a baby, body of a child, body of an adult. That consciousness has not gone anywhere. It has got layered by the sense of doership and the ego's experiences through life. That is what has happened. And therefore, I do believe, honestly, whether we know it or not, we are all operating from the heart. Because that is where we came from. The mind and its complexities developed later. It may appear we are operating from the mind because of that whole cycle of time, but we have not lost the heart. The point is to rediscover it. The point is to rediscover it. It is not lost.
How did?
That is why I say, and my teacher would even say that, like he would say, first, you have the intellectual understanding. It makes sense. Everything makes sense. But I cannot deploy it in daily living. And he would say it is a process in time because your new conditioning has to override the old conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm normally like full of anger towards someone or whatever, and the teaching comes in intellectually, kind of, oh God, why am I? Now I can see this person can't help being themselves. So that's a new conditioning overwriting the old conditioning. Appears as a process in time. Then when I find it as a default setting that now I'm viewing this person in the new light, I'm not going through that mental process, you call it operating from the heart. But he would clarify, these are not two different things. It is just one. It only means that this new conditioning, the new way of seeing is going deeper and deeper. So it becomes my new way of living. So I do believe that we are all operating from the heart. That I can see it on faces. I can see the child's face in the person. I saw it in someone who came and broke down. Someone, a very tough lady, fended for herself, made a success of herself in life. And that child popped out, that lost child, which was fighting and battling against oppression and aggression and therefore became aggressive herself. And in that split second when tears came out of her eyes, I could see the child there waiting to be rediscovered. What happened to me? What happened to my life? How did I become this way? She didn't say all that. I could see that. That is who I was. And my point is, that is who you are. This is the journey of rediscovery. Imagine you looked at everyone in your life as little children.
Would you say it's also like our conditioning that's made us believe that these experiences are necessary to be, to have enlightened living, so to speak?
You see, experiences definitely give a glimpse of that which is not the mundane, because it shakes you out from your stupor. So for that person, it's necessary. Otherwise, that person may not be shaken out of it. But someone else may not need to be shaken out. So this one-size-fits-all approach does not work. Some people get the experience and then life is again a mess. They can't relate to the two. Experience is there, but there's no integration and translation in daily living. Then they start suffering the experience. They want more of the experience. Then the whole focus is gone, because if the focus is then experience dependent.
I feel like in my experience, it was, I felt like it was a lie that was sold to us, that this is the state, which is supposed to be an enlightened state. And the more I'm like living life, I feel like that's not really it. You know, it's not an experience you can attain or be given, really. It's something completely different. And that's also like shaken up many things, you know, because it's like, yeah, your whole perspective sort of shifts, because you don't really see life like that anymore.
It's very tricky, because I have seen many instances where once people have had the experience, they have gone on to things, smoking, ayahuasca, this, that, to get back all those experiences. Problem is, we are in the chakkar of experiences. Experience.
Because even books like Autobiography of a Yogi and all that, they talk about all these chamatkars and like these miracles and these great experiences. So one can easily think, okay, you know, these are the great beings that have...
They were great beings. They were great. They were great beings.
So we've always perceived the enlightened state as this, miraculous state where everything's possible and, you know, you're above it all. And but it's really not that.
Siddha Rameshwar Maharaj told Nisargadatta Maharaj, no experiences for you. You have a job to do. When Irina Tweedie was bragging in the satsang of Bhai Sahib to the person next to her, saying this person is going to ask this question to Bhai Sahib, that person is thinking that, she knew everything. And she went and told Bhai Sahib that, I became all pervasive, totally psychic. I knew what each person was going to ask you. Amazing. You've done it. And he said, is it so? So the next day she was very excited. Went, sat in the satsang, no experience. Zero. So she went and complained to Bhai Sahib, what have you done? I could see everything. He said, did you see yourself? You were becoming like a balloon full of experiences. Finished. I met a man, I've written about it. Did I mention it? Who was driving through a village and there was commotion on the streets and they saw a boy had died. He follows Tantra Sadhana. And he said, this is my true test. And he went, got off the car and picked up earth from the ground. And he said, this is a true test of faith in my guru. And he sprinkled the earth on the child and the child came alive. And he said, I have full faith in my guru. This is the acid test of my abilities. And then he said, I must try it again, just to make sure. Another instance happened somewhere else. They called him, did the same thing, gone. He said, I learned a very big lesson. And I said, at least you have the humility to admit it, that you thought that was your doing. I had read out one Ramana Maharshi quote someone had sent. Did I tell you all this one? Whatever you do, always give your 100%, except if you're donating blood. Yeah. All that we need to do is to keep quiet. Peace is our real nature, and peace is the only reality. Peace is the only reality. Ramana Maharshi has said this. That is what we are striving for through the process of understanding. Gyan Yoga, living a life of peace and harmony, equanimity in the world, not apart from it. That is where our awareness and our attention is focused. That is why I say the only siddhi worth having is peace of mind.
That doesn't come and go like the other one.
Exactly, exactly. Once you touch it, there's no going back. Because you see, your whole life gets reset with that criteria. Your criteria is now peace. When it is that, all life is samadhi, isn't it? Once one yogi had written on states of samadhi, he asked his chela to bring the book out. Very various levels. And I was sitting by his side. And you see this research I've done myself going into these states of samadhi. This one you will know. This one you will know. And I'm like, I said, I don't know any of these states of samadhi. He said, no, you know, these you won't know because these are too high up for you. So I said to myself, I only know peace of mind, bas. Andar ki baat hai, andar ka maamla hai, bhai saab. I'm happy with that. And one beautiful thing happens when you are at peace. You will find that those around you become peaceful. It is bound to happen.
I know so many people who unconsciously stay in there and nothing gets absorbed.
That's what you think. At some level, we are inherently drawn to the vibration of peace. In a household, if one person is at peace, even the mind, which is most mired in conflict and daily living, will draw from that well. It may not be obvious. It may not be something that can be seen. People are not stupid. They realize this person is not reacting like they used to earlier. This person, no matter what I say, seems unmoved. That registration has happened in their consciousness. But because they are so hardwired into their blueprint, it's going to take time. But we learn by observing people, watching our friends, people in our house. Everything is being registered. Because the call is the same for everyone, the call of the divine. You're looking more at peace today than when you came last month.